Well,
that got live. So we were at the tail end of our Jeremiah study. I'm probably more thankful for this than you are, but we finally get to the destruction of Babylon in chapter 50. Compared to the other nations, minus Jerusalem, Babylon gets the most verses. It gets the entirety of both chapters 50 and 51. If you got little headings on there, chapter 50 is your judgment. It's telling you why Babylon is going to get judged. 50 is actually talking about the destruction of Babylon. And so most of the other nations just get it all wrapped in a couple of verses. But because Babylon was used as the source of punishment for the other nations, they have to be explained, because in that day and time, the people who were in power were the ones who were seemed righteous. And so going from the most powerful nation in the world to complete utter destruction, you have to give a reason. It just can't be left up to fate. So that's why I believe that chapter 50 is there. It's because God is saying, this is why I'm doing it. So to begin with, why he's doing it, in verse 2 it says that he's putting Baal to shame. I'll just read verse 2. Declare among the nations and proclaim. Set up a banner and proclaim. Conceal it not and say, Babylon is taken. Baal is put to shame. Merodach is dismayed. Her images are put to shame. Her idols are dismayed. So here we have the initial Babylon is going to be put to shame. Babylon's God is going to be put to shame. He continues in verse 3, saying that it's going to be this nation from the north, a nation that we know as the Medes and the Persians. Shortly after Nebuchadnezzar, and as we know, Nebuchadnezzar was the Babylon empire. He built it up. After he built it up, it basically nosedived. It didn't last long after his death. Shortly after his death, Medes and Persians come in, and that's the end of the Babylonian Empire. So we have this nation coming from the north. And then we go into verses 4 and 5. It's its own little section. 4 and 5, 6 and 7 are their own little section. 4 and 5 is talking about Israel being in remorse. I'll just read it real fast. In those days and in that time, declares the Lord, the people of Israel and the people of Judah shall come together, weeping as they come, and they shall seek the Lord their God. They shall ask the way of Zion with faces turned towards it. Say, come, let us join ourselves to the Lord in an everlasting covenant that will never be forgotten. So we see that God is saying, in those days and in that time, being the time of Babylonian destruction, the Israelites will fully come back to God. They will fully understand their ways, and they will say, we want to be your people again. We want you to be our God, and we want to have this covenant again with you. And so it's interesting that he follows that with them being lost sheep. And if you take the analogy of the lost sheep, and considering where the Israelites and the Judeans will be at this time, being in Babylon, they will be like lost sheep. They will be away from their God, in a sense, if I can say that. I know he's everywhere, but compared to if God is Jerusalem, if God is the temple, they are away from the temple. They're away from their God. And so in this sense, they are lost sheep. And he says at the end of verse 6, they have forgotten their fold. All who found them have devoured them. And their enemies have said, we are not guilty, for they have sinned against the Lord, their inhabitations of righteousness, the Lord, the hope of their father. So they are lost sheep. They are out there. They have been taken away. They have been devoured by their enemies. And the guilty are rightfully so, saying that they have not sinned because the Lord has told them to do this. The Lord sent the Babylonians to come destroy them in Jerusalem and in Egypt. And so they are free of guilt. Then we move to 8 through 10. The main point of 8 through 10 is telling them to flee from Babylon. We get that in the beginning of verse 8. Flee from the midst of Babylon and go out in the land of the Chaldeans. In verse 10, Chaldea shall be plundered. All who plunder her shall be sated, declares the Lord. So we see that God is telling them, when all this is happening, leave Babylon. Go away from Babylon. He, in a sense, he is saying, I'm trying to spare you. It's going to be utter destruction. Leave. And as we know, when the Medes and the Persians come in, they send everybody back to where they're from, because they believe, okay, if they're in their land, they're happy. If they're happy, they're not going to revolt. And so with that concept being in place, and with the downside of the Babylonians, it makes total sense for God to say flee, because it's what everybody else would do. If you see an army coming at you and you know you can't defeat them, you run away. God's saying, it's okay. Babylon's going to get destroyed. You need to run away. And then 11 through 16, he's saying, though you rejoice, though you exult, a plunder of my heritage, though you frolic like heifers in the pastures and neigh like stallions. This is a lot of imagery saying they're going to be really happy. And the reason why they're going to be really happy is because Babylon is going to get destroyed and God's wrath is going to be outpoured. In verse 16, cut off from Babylon the sower, the one who handles the sickle in time of harvest, because the sword of the oppressor, everyone shall turn to his own people, and everyone shall flee to his own land. So again, God is saying Babylon is going to be cut off, everybody is going to go back to their own land, which is the policy that the Medes and Persians had, which is another interesting fact, is because before the Medes and the Persians had fully taken over and come up with this policy, God is saying this is what's going to happen. And so it's another way that we know that God is all-knowing, because he knows what kingdoms' policies are going to be before the kingdoms are established. Any thoughts so far? Any comments? I'm not sure, because it doesn't clearly switch to Babylon when it's clearly talking about the Israelites in 4 through 10. Nathan, do you have any thoughts?
Verse 10 does end with declares the Lord. So that could be seen as the ending of that.
Right.
That the
My only question would be verse 14, set yourselves in array against Babylon. So that would be a weird statement, unless it's switching back to the Israelites. But, I mean... Right.
You know, the authors, or God is talking to Babylon, and then it's as if he turns and talks to the Medes and the Persians in verse 14.
Right.
Well, there's even in verse 14 to make a transition from talking to somebody to talking about the people who pass by being called, and it's not directed.
Right. I'm not good in English, so I don't even get it half the time anyways.
Most people don't read modern American poetry and immediately understand all the ins and outs of it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Different culture, different language. Yeah.
But it is interesting how God has called Babylon to bring judgment on his own people.
Right. Right. Well, the key statement in all of this is, because of the wrath of God, of the Lord shall be there. You know, it's because of the wrath of God against Babylon. We see that the wrath of God was poured out on Israel and on Judah. But at that time, the wrath of God wasn't pointed at Babylon. And because of the whole course of the events and everything that was going on and the pride of King Nebuchadnezzar, the wrath of God was quenched because it was outpoured on the Israelites. And now, because of their pride and because of their sin, it's now being turned and put on the Babylon. And that's if you want a statement summary about this chapter, that's basically the whole point. God is saying, because of the wrath, it's going to happen. Mr. Wynn.
Well, God used Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon to punish Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And Nebuchadnezzar, dynasty only lasted 3 generations, 70 years. And when the captivity was over, God punished Nebuchadnezzar.
Yep. And that's not in my book. That's somebody else's book. But yes, we do see that later on. And it's interesting seeing the dialogue between the two nations, especially in Daniel and his dealings with them. It is interesting dealing with it on that side, because here, we just see all foreshadowing of what's to come. And at this point, it's kind of like, okay, well, they're sinners too. So it's, you know, you plunder, you sin, you get plundered. So, all right. So God's plan in all this, he calls Israel, Israel is a hunted sheep driven away by lions. I've had the hardest time trying to figure out why he included that statement, because he immediately finishes or continues in saying, you know, first the king of Assyria devoured him, and then now Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon has gnawed at his bones. It's an interesting statement by in the whole context. It's like, okay, we're talking about why Babylon is bad, and then all of a sudden, okay, Israel is like hunted sheep. to right. I mean,
you know, Assyria's come in first, and then now, as if that wasn't bad enough, now Nebuchadnezzar's come in. Basically nothing. Now, what's God going to do about it?
And it leads into ultimately, verse 19 is one of those brief glimpses of restoration.
Right. Right.
And so that's, I mean, it's this brief picture of restoration. It's been really bad. They're going to get punished. Israel's going to be restored. And it's picking up on that same imagery from the hunted sheep to the pasture sheep.
Right. But with verse 18, it's almost because of the therefore, he says, therefore, I will punish Babylon and Assyria. It's almost like was the destruction of Israel, the reason for the destruction of Babylon. And that's the part I'm really having a hard time understanding. It's because if Nebuchadnezzar really was God's servant, he's getting punished for being God's servant. I mean, if we just take, you know, these four verses and put it this way. Because verse 19 talks about the restoration. Verse 20 says, in that day, declares the Lord, iniquity shall be sought, but there shall be none. And no sin in Israel shall be found, or Judah shall be found. For I will pardon those who I leave as a remnant. So the reason why I can't fully understand 17 is because of 18. Because unless Babylon and Assyria's sin was the destruction of Judah and Israel, this whole four verses really don't make a lot of sense to me. So, Joy?
I can't remember which of the prophets it is, but in Lino books, he's the prophet that's asking questions, you know, how long, Lord, are you going to let this wickedness go on? And you know, but it's like God says, you know, I'm going to take care of it. I'm sending in,
right.
And then Habakkuk says, Lord, they're worse than we are.
Right.
So I think that's part of the punishment thing for Babylon.
You can say the same thing about Jesus and the people who killed him. The people who killed Jesus were guilty of sin. And yet God used his crucifixion to achieve victory over Satan. And so it shows that God is sovereign even over people who are in rebellion. And so God uses rebellious Babylon to judge and punish Israel, but that doesn't excuse Babylon of their rebellion, and God's going to make sure that they're paid for their rebellion as well. And I think part of the message is just that God is sovereign over everybody, and he may choose to use people who are acting wickedly to accomplish some purpose, but that does not excuse them from any of the
wickedness. Yeah.
And it reminds me a little bit of some of the scenes at the end of King Saul's life, where, you know, David is saying, you know, I'm not going to kill the anointed one of God. And if I find someone does, he has that person executed.
Right. Right.
David wasn't a rebel against that. And so I think there may be something to be said of, you know, God is punishing Babylon specifically for attacking and destroying his covenant people. Even though they were in rebellion, even though God had taken the promises away from them, they are still attacking God's covenant people. And so there may be, you know, in that light, there may be a way of saying, yes, it is even specifically for this that they are being punished. In addition to, you know, all the other atrocities.
Right. All right, well, that moves us to 21 to 27, which is talking about this battle that's going to come. here I can only assume that he's talking to, talking to in a sense about the Medes and the Persians, telling them to go up to the land, kill and devote them to destruction. 22, the noise of battle and great destruction. 23, how the hammer of the whole earth is cut down and broken, how Babylon has become a whore among the nations. So right there, God is saying, you know, they were cutting, they were this hammer, this great entity, this great military power, and how they've become a whore among the nations. Basically, once this destruction has come, you're going to look at this beginning of this great nation that's done everything it's wanted to do, and now it's an abomination. It's deserted. It's demolished. He talks about verse 5, the Lord has opened his armory and brought out the weapons of his wrath, for the Lord God of hosts has work to do in the land of the Chaldeans. That's a powerful statement. Think about God opening up his armory. Now, presumably, if God hasn't done this before, and we see utter destruction throughout all of Palestine and Egypt, and God hasn't even opened up his armory yet, what does he have in store for the Babylonians? I mean, just kind of wrap that in your mind. If he's just saying, when it comes to the Babylonians, that he's going to open up his armory, I mean, it's kind of saying, you know, I'm going to slap you across the face and that's utter destruction, but, you know, they're getting everything I can throw at them. And so we get the sense that it's going to be utter destruction. Verse 26, devote her to destructing. Let nothing be left of her. 27, kill all her bulls. Let them go down to the slaughter. Woe to them, for their last day has come, the time of punishment. And so we see this battle that's going to come down. We see that God is going to throw everything he has at the Chaldeans, and he's going to complete his work that he has planned for them, and there's going to be nothing left because the time of their punishment has come. Now, another reason why he's going to do this is at the end of verse 28, it says, vengeance for the temple. It says, a voice, they flee and escape from the land of Babylon, declares to declare in Zion the vengeance of the Lord our God, vengeance for his temple. So though God is not bound to his temple, he still takes a little bit of possession of it. And he realizes, in an earthly sense, that the temple itself was represented to other nations as him. And because of their destruction of the temple and what they did, as we'll see later on in chapter 52, this is another reason why they're getting this utter destruction, because of his vengeance for the temple. And so as we continue with the destruction to come, we see in 29 through 32 how he's going to encamp around her, let no one escape, repay her according to her deeds, to do her according to all that she has done, for she has proudly defied the Lord, the Holy One of Israel. Therefore her young men shall fall in her squares, and all her soldiers shall be destroyed on that day, declares the Lord. So we get the sense that we get a little play-by-play, if you will, about the destruction that's coming. And so we see that the normal tactic of surrounding the city, cutting her off from water, from agriculture, from food, basically let the people starve or surrender. It's basically what happened when you would circle a city. And again, He points out another reason why they're getting this destruction, for they proudly defiled. So it's not that they, as we were saying before, were doing evil things. It's they were proud in the fact that they were doing all these evil things. And so that's another thing that we need to realize is there's that extra step that some people do that we may fall ourselves into of being proud that we're sinners. And so that's just another reason why they're getting 33 through 38. I believe he's talking to the Israelites at this point, and it's almost a redemption type passage. In 34, he says, "Their Redeemer is strong. The Lord of hosts is his name." So we do get this glimpse of redemption in this judgment on Babylon. And so it's clear to see that though this judgment was placed upon Babylon, and we hope that it got to Babylon, it wasn't written for Babylon. It was clearly written for the Israelites and clearly written so that they may know. And so we get this whole, redeemer type imagery of him taking the sword, I believe, except for verse 38, 35, 36, and 37, it says a sword against. And so we get this, redeeming the Israelites through the battle, through winning them back over. He talks about talking about the destruction of the people, the officials, the warriors, all the horses, the troops, the women, the treasures, the water. I mean, he's making this destruction complete. He's leaving no stone unturned, no person unpunished. So, any thoughts, questions? All right. Through 43 talks about this wild beast. Therefore, wild beasts shall dwell within Babylon, and ostrich shall dwell in her. She shall never again have people, nor be inhabited for all generations. As when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah and their neighbor cities, declares the Lord, shall no man shall dwell there, and no son of man shall sojourn in her. These two verses are very interesting because I have friends who've gone overseas into Afghanistan, and they've found Babylon, and all the excavators and the archaeologists have gone over there. The local people will not stay there. They will not stay in the city. And they put it back to this statement of Jeremiah, saying that nobody is going to be destroyed like Sodom and Gomorrah, and nobody should inhabit it. Archaeologists will stay in tents, but it's through great protests from the locals. And that's just something interesting, you know, over 2,000 years later, locals still don't want to go there. And you would think if, you know, there wasn't a God, why fear? But because they said it's like Sodom and Gomorrah, it's been passed down and passed down and passed down to a place that you just don't go there. You don't stay there. You may go there, but you don't stay the night. And so that's just something interesting that we can look at even today and say, hey, people still don't go there. You know, people are still obeying this, and they do not live there. Skip down to verse 43. The king of Babylon heard the report of them, and his hands fell helpless. Anguish against him, pain as of a woman in labor. Here we're talking about this battle, this mighty nation coming from the north. and this battle that's going to happen. And you see that the king is going to be helpless because it's going to be out of destruction. The Medes and the Persians, as we know, are going to completely destroy him. And it's interesting that this king who took over the, or this kingdom that took over the entire world, is going to be completely helpless. A nation that made other nations fear them and be helpless is now helpless because God is no longer on their side. And so we can see that though you may be big and though you may be powerful, if you, God is not on your side, you're helpless. And that's clearly seen throughout the Bible, but it's also said here. All right, so the last little bit of chapter 50 is this lion in the thicket of Jordan. I'll just read it real fast. Behold, like a lion coming up from the thicket of the Jordan and gets a perennial pasture, I will suddenly make them run away from her, and I will point over her whomever I choose. For who is like me? Who will summon me? What shepherd can stand before me? Therefore, hear the plan that the Lord has made against Babylon, and the purpose that he has formed against the land of the Chaldeans. Surely the little ones of their flock shall be dragged away. Surely their foals shall be appalled at their fate. At the sound of the capture of Babylon, the earth shall tremble, and her cry shall be heard among the nations. So it's, we get this second imagery or another imagery of this lion attacking sheep. In this sense, the lion is God and the Medes and the Persians. And the sheep and the shepherd is the king of Babylon and the nation of Babylon. And it's not a pleasant sight. And especially when you see verse 46, that, you know, the whole earth shall tremble. I mean, not the physical ground, but all the people. When they hear about this, you know, when they hear about this great nation being brought to its knees and being destroyed, it's going to be a sight to be seen and a sight to hear about. Any thoughts before we move to chapter 51? All right, 51, the utter destruction of Babylon. Here we're, first verse we see, thus says the Lord, behold, I will stir up a spirit of a destroyer against Babylon and against the inhabitants of Lake Kamai. And I will send to Babylon winnowers, and they shall winnow her. And they shall empty her land when they come against her from every side on the day of trouble. Skip to verse 6. Again, we see, flee from the midst of Babylon. Let everyone save his life. Be not cut off in her punishment. For this is the time of the Lord's vengeance, the repayment he is endearing her. In verse 7, Babylon was a golden cup in the Lord's hand, making all the earth drunken. The nations drank of her wine, therefore the nation went mad. Verse 9, he would have healed Babylon, but she was not healed. Forsake her. Let us go each to his own country, for her judgment was reached up to heavens and has been lifted up to the skies. So this verse tells me that their destruction wasn't final, that they did have this opportunity, that they weren't just this wicked nation that was created for the sole purpose of going in, destroying Jerusalem, getting destroyed itself. And we see that they did have this opportunity to be healed, but just like Pharaoh, their hearts were hardened, and that was the end of the story. They made it so that they could not be healed. Moving to verse 11, it says, "Sharpen the arrows, take up the shields. The Lord has stirred up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, because his purpose concerning Babylon is to destroy it. For that is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple." So a second time, we see the destruction of Babylon is for vengeance of the temple. In verse 17, "Every man is stupid and without knowledge. Every goldsmith is put to shame by his idols. For his images are false, and there is no breath in them." So this is not a statement of pure intelligence, but it's more of knowledge. It's like the old adage, you know, you cut a tree down, you cook food with one half and you make the other half into an idol. Well, what's the point of that? You're worshiping something you created yourself. Kind of dumb. And God says himself, every man is stupid. Basically saying, if you do this, you are stupid. So, you know, it's, you know, I feel like the later we get in the book, the more blunt God is. And he's just calling it as it is. Every man is stupid to build an idol and worship it. Because he's bowing down to something that he himself created and he himself built up. And it has no worth. And there is no breath in it. Verse 20, he describes the Medes as a hammer and a weapon for war. "With you, I break down nations into pieces. With you, I destroy kingdoms. With you, I break into pieces the horse and his rider. With you, I break into pieces the chariot and the charioteer." 22 and 23. Breaking pieces of man, woman, old man, youth, young man, young woman, shepherd, flock, farmer, and his team, governors, commanders. So basically, with the Medes and the Persian, there is going to be the destruction. There's going to be separation from top to bottom. Everything that they would have held dear, or they would have held as part of their building up, he is going to break apart. So in repaying Babylon, verse 24, for all their evil that they have done in Zion, he states that the warriors of Babylon will cease to fight, or they have ceased fighting. They remain in their strongholds. Their strength has failed. They have become women. Sorry, women. Think of that statement. Warriors have become women. You know, it's not to insult women, but God says it, not me. They have basically lost their will to fight. They've lost their manhood. And so, in a sense, they have become like women who do not fight.
You have to understand it as well in, you know, an ancient Israelite context rather than a, you know, 21st century politically correct women's liberation context where women really did stay at home and
right.
Do home stuff. And that's all they did. And culture thought they were, you know, basically useless was what the culture said.
No, they're for child rearing.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was... Yeah,
right.
In that cultural context, it would have really carried a very strong sort of symbol.
Right. And so with that saying, it's basically an army that has given up at this point. That might be a little bit more of the feminist view, and not calling them women, but they've just given up. And so it's this great downfall. verse 34 and 35, we get this cry of Israel, and then 36 and 37, we get this Lord's response. 34, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, has devoured me. He has crushed me. He has made me an empty vessel. He has swallowed me like a monster. He has filled his stomach with my delicacies. He has rinsed me out. The violence done to me and to my kinsmen be upon Babylon. Let the inhabitant of Zion say, my blood be upon the inhabitants of Chaldea. Let Jerusalem say. God responds, therefore, thus says the Lord, behold, I will plead your cause and take vengeance for you. I will dry up her sea, and I'll make her fountains dry. And Babylon shall become a heap of ruins and a haunt of jackals, a horror and a hissing without inhabitants. And as my time quickly runs out, verses 38 through 40, he's talking about... bringing them up like lambs to the slaughter. And verse 41, how Babylon is taken, the praise of the whole earth seized. Verse 44, how it's become a horror. 45 through 51, save yourself from this fierce anger. And then 52 says, therefore, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will execute judgment among her images and through all her land. The womb shall go through Babylon, shall mount up to heaven. And though she shall fortify her stronghold, yet the shores will come from me against her, declares the Lord. And so the rest of the chapter it speaks about the fall of Babylon. Verse 64 says, thus shall Babylon sink and rise no more because of the disaster that I'm bringing up to her, and they shall become exhausted. So, but it's interesting, at the end of verse 64, it says, thus far are the words of Jeremiah. So 52 really is a summary statement tacked on to Jeremiah explaining all the things that have happened. It talks about the fall of Jerusalem, the temple burning, the people exalted Babylon, Dan, to help your cause about Christmas, Jehoiakim getting released on Christmas. Hey, it's 12th month, 25th day. That's Christmas. All right. So.